Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Hannah Chapat, founder and CEO of Hyber, the student accommodation platform. While a student at the University of Bristol, Hannah experienced the anxiety of trying to find a place to rent and saw how vulnerable first-time renters were to unresponsive agents and rogue landlords. Unfortunately, many of us have been there. With 3 million students in the UK, she saw the need for a platform that takes better care of them, guiding them through the renting journey and the jargon. Shortly after graduating and after a brutal series of cold calls to landlords to better understand their pain points, Hannah launched Hyber in 2020. Hyber is now active in 10 major cities, and they've expanded their focus from undergraduates to other first-time renters, including graduates. Welcome to Jazz Shapers. Just in your own words, why have you just had, in the last year and a bit or so, the confidence of investors to put £3.3 million into your business? What's going on? What are they backing?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of the initial conversations when we were first kind of raising investment, kind of 2-3 years ago, was around the passion and the story, the origin story of why I created this business. And so this very much came from my own anxiety as a student, not knowing where to go to find a house, not knowing who I could trust. And that really helped me understand the student problem. But then to get to the next level and to raise the 3.3 million rounds, we had to show that we understood the other side of the equation, so the supply side of the marketplace, which is landlords and agents. And what we kind of realized is that the only way to really transform the way young people rent, to remove the painful process of renting, is to empower agents and landlords to deliver a better renter experience. Because ultimately, the landlord and the agent are the ones in control of the renter experience. So to raise a seed round, we needed to show that we understood the pain points from landlords and agents and why that relationship was breaking down and what the solution was.
What I love about the eminent wisdom of investors is that they say no and you're mad. And even the people in the industry, when you kicked this off 5 years ago or so, said, Hannah, you've got to be off your rocker. Why did they say you're off your rocker? What is it about the rental market that makes it look like this is a silly idea?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The optics of the rental market is because rents have been increasing 10 to 15% year on year. People think there's no problem. People think it's a really lucrative market, and so it's not broken. Whereas actually, smart capital can see those margins and see actually if they can be optimized further by having better workflow management tools, then actually you can be making even better margins. So I think when you're looking at the rental market and seeing that rents are increasing, seeing that there's a supply constrained market, meaning there's not enough student housing, you would just say, oh, actually, this market is booming. There's nothing more that you can do. And actually, that's the opportunity because it's been overlooked, because it's not really considered a sexy market for disruption from AI companies. People have left it alone, and that's been kind of our opportunity.
And you, Hannah, I mean, you know, you're one of the youngest, I think, that people I've had on the show, one of the youngest founders.
Oh, wow.
not the youngest, but pretty close.
Okay.
Again, a lot of belief. What are they backing in you?
Definitely, I think being a young female founder, you have to have traction. It was not one of those, I raised £3.3 million off an idea. I raised it from the traction of showing that, you know, in the first time we raised money, we had a profitable business. From day one, we were generating revenue. We were matching students to landlords whilst, you know, spending no money. And then showing that we were able to kind of scale that up. So it's very much, traction is really important being a young founder and being a first-time founder. And then it's very much passion and storytelling. I think a lot of geniuses, great founders, if you can't tell your story in a succinct way of the why you're the right team to be solving this problem and really understanding the kind of pain points and why your solution is unique, then you're not going to land the point. And luckily for us, a lot of our investors have recently been through the trauma of their children going to university and thinking, my God, this is a very outdated and, you know, inefficient process. Surely there could be something better in the 21st century.
So they back you because the idea is good. They back you because from day one, Hannah has said there's a pain point and the investors have had children who are, and like me, the trauma of finding the rental thing and working and it all feeling above board and all that. But young founder, we'll come to the woman versus man thing in a moment, but young founder who gets going on stuff, who has rejected the milk round in the consultancy world, who suffered from dyslexia, who's kind of decided to go and set this thing up, where's all that from, that sense of, I'm not going to call it rebellion, Hannah, because that's a big word, but there's something in you, I think, which looks a little bit like the system isn't for you, and I'm trying to work out why.
So when I was in my final year of studying, when I was, as you said, rejecting the kind of consulting route, it was very much because I was fascinated by the gap in the market that my housemate at the time and I were discussing every weekend, you know, how are there 3 million students, growing population by 2% year on year, market worth over 13 billion, huge opportunity. And every brand wants to target students as the first touch point in their consumer life cycle. So such a underappreciated, overlooked cohort and such a raw pain point of how much students really hated renting. I mean, you look at any Student Mind survey and 50% of students experience say that mental health is at its worst and always kind of go back to the financial struggles and how hard it is to rent. So thought, how can there be such a palpable pain point? Yet there was no platform that was really trying to serve that group. And that just, I couldn't believe that no one was talking about this as a business, as a problem. And so when I was going into doing more applications, I was just feeling horribly miserable and I couldn't see a future. And then when I sat down to think about what Hiber could be, I was excited, I was energized. And I think there's a big privilege starting a business right after university because you really can't fail. At the time, I was doing some waitressing work. All my friends were still studying or they were traveling. No one knew what they wanted to do. So, you know, if I had failed in that year or 2-3 years after, you know, I wasn't going to be judged for it. I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have a family. I didn't have any kind of, you know, financial pressures. So I really had the luxury of being able to just start writing a business plan, creating a very basic Squarespace, no code needed website and just jumping into it.
But so many of your friends at the time, and I think back to the time when I was graduating, you know, I looked at the graduate jobs, I looked at structure, I looked at all these things and went, that looks kind of cool, I think I'll do that. And I know that times have changed and obviously people now want to set up their own business and it's cool to set up your own business now versus when I graduated in 1837.
Or even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, even 5 years ago, that's the last thing you do. But you were comfortable. I get the low consequences of failure, but you were comfortable with no structure. Is that because you got used to no structure? I mean, you went to school, you got your A levels, you did very well. You've gone to Bristol University, all those things. Where was that comfort with nothing around you from? Because again, you go into consultancy to learn how to write the business plan, to learn how to work out, quantify the total addressable market. The thing you just reeled off, 13 billion is the TAM and all that. Why did you feel so comfortable just getting on with it?
I found actually that it was a confidence building exercise. I found the more I worked on Hiber, the more my own confidence grew in myself because I felt really for the first time ever, like I had a mission. And I felt really energized and excited by that mission. And it was the most confident I had ever felt. And the more I worked on it, the more my confidence grew, which I think is a great lesson for anyone, you know, thinking about starting a business. But to answer your question directly, it was very much my brother's influence. So my brother is 10 years older than me. He was BCG and he went on to be MD of Africa's first unicorn. So he really started talking to me about the startup space. I did a summer internships at his startup. And he was the one that kind of gave me that push of, you can do it. You know, this is what a startup even is.
Because it's no different to this. It's this.
Yeah. Because I wasn't even part of the Bristol entrepreneurship, innovation, nothing. I'd never even heard of startups. So he was the one that gave me that exposure. And then his wife at the time was also looking at starting her own business. So I think as soon as that ladder is in front of you and you realize that there's a route to a new path, and it becomes doable.
And that's what happened. You climbed the ladder. Much more from my guest, Hannah Shabbat, coming up in a couple of minutes. And she's going to be revealing more without knowing she's going to reveal more. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. Lita Kellett invites business founders to share their practical advice and industry insights. For those of you thinking about starting your very own thing, in fact, just like Hannah. In this clip, we hear from Tarek Ralph, architect and founder and CEO of Catalog, a digital work hub aiming to give people a radically simpler way to coordinate their work.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
I think founding your own business has a lot to do with understanding what you're looking to do in founding a business, like why do you do it? Betting on yourself and acquiring all the skills necessary to build a team, build a product, market it, raise the capital. It can be quite a lot of friction, but it can also be quite a lot of fun. And if you know why you're doing it, it gets a lot easier. I've always been interested in making and building things, which is where I got into architecture, which is where I've been making software. And so a large parts of my job don't feel like a job. The parts that, you know, running a company is still, there's a million friction points every day. There's friction with customers, there's friction with product, there's friction with all kinds of, you know, unforeseen issues that pop up every now and then. But when you find joy in the act of building, which is what I do, it just becomes a necessary pain and the side effect. And so knowing why you're building a company, why you want to start a business and what you're looking to get out of it, and having clarity around that generally helps quite a bit.
The Michigan Innovation Series, in association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dereya. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest today, in case you haven't noticed, is Hannah Shabbat, founder and CEO of Hyber, the student accommodation platform. You mentioned, and I love the way you said it, about the confidence grew as you did more of the thing you were doing, i.e. setting up this business. And you talked about having a mission. And again, I read a lot about this stuff, and obviously I'm very privileged. I get to meet a lot of people setting up their own business, and people throw around the word mission, and what they really mean is I found something that was going to make me some money. Where does the money feature in all of this for you? I mean, obviously you need to drive a successful business, but is the bigger purpose to solve the 3 million people problem, or is the bigger purpose to create a next, you know, a unicorn?
I think they're very closely tied, and I think the key word that you just said there is purpose. I can only speak for myself, but I genuinely believe that purpose is happiness. And wholeheartedly focusing on nothing else but building Hyber gave me purpose, and that built my confidence. But to answer your question, it is and it was all about making renting painless, making renting easy, starting with those most in need, which is students. And venturing on that journey is, of course, about financial freedom and creating, you know, that opportunity for my family and the next generation below me. But also a big part of that financial freedom is also the kind of the opportunities that come with that. So being a young woman in the space and wanting to showcase that it's possible for all the other young women to come after me, I think needing more female role models is a big driver of what I'm doing. And wanting to be in the room where there's often not enough women involved is a big driver in what I'm doing.
Do you think the investors could smell the conviction? You know, we talked earlier about why investors invested in you. I imagine they saw the conviction I'm seeing now and the purpose. You mentioned happiness, but the purpose of actually solving the problem with 3 million. Would that also be true of them? Is that why, do you think, they also said, here's some money?
Definitely. I think often investors talk about investing in the founder, especially in early stage businesses. It might pivot, you know, three times over, but you back that the founder has the drive and determination to make the business a success, no matter what that business ends up evolving into. And especially for me, you know, in the last round, it was all about showing how we were approaching this problem from a different perspective. So the mission is all about making renting painless, but understanding that why renting is painful is because the lack of infrastructure that landlords and agents use. So we were going about an age-old problem that, you know, everyone's tried to solve in some sort. And there's been a graveyard of student accommodation businesses that have tried to solve this problem and have all failed because marketplaces are really hard to build. And we've gone about in a way of being a software-enabled marketplace because we understand that the reason why renting is painful is because landlords and agents are set up to fail. They cannot deliver a good renter experience because they lack that infrastructure. So that was our approach. And I think showing that we were, you know, tackling a archaic old sector, but with a new, fresh, innovative approach, I think that was really what interests them.
In the investment raising process, the funding process, again, a conversation I've had many times is it's brutal. It's not very nice. You know, it's like your worst exam, but exacerbated by 100 times. Were there moments when you felt like it was going to happen? I mean, obviously, the structure of a fundraise is relatively clear. And you put papers out, you say, this is what we're worth, and this is what we're going to get, and so on and so forth. But were there moments when you were confident it was going to happen, you know, that you could see that people were going to stump up the next amount of cash?
The hardest thing of raising money is that you're, you know, building the plane whilst flying the plane, whilst trying to fund the plane. So you're juggling lots of different plates at the same time. So the whole time I was going to raise, I'm also actively involved in the business, you know, driving sales, working on product, etc. And so you're always looking at the different routes in front of you and trying to build, you know, a sustainable, profitable business so that you don't have to be as reliant on capital. Obviously, the way we're going to here is trying to get to profitability at scale so that we never have to raise. We can choose our investors at the right time. So I never want to put all our eggs in one basket. I'm always looking at the different options in front of us to ensure long-term survival. So I'm never overly reliant on one investor. I always know that the round will eventually close. And depending on how much we raise, we'll approach growth in a different way.
Have you managed to balance that? You said the flying the plane, the making the plane, and then the funding of the plane. Where do you, I mean, if that's an hour of your time, what percentage goes on each in that moment through that period? Because this is something, again, I talk to founders about, and they're at it. It's a 24-hour job. And I don't get how you can keep going. I mean, where was the focus for you? Because people often say you've just got to be a full-time fundraiser.
Yeah, it's very much a luxury to be able to be a full-time fundraiser. I think if in a co-founder dynamic, that's definitely possible for one founder to focus more on fundraising. But as a solo founder, you have to be fundraising, but also driving sales, thinking about the team, the culture, thinking about hiring new people depending on the raise. So
that it's messy, planning, basically.
Planning for when you raise that money, how you're going to spend it and already be getting that team in place. So as soon as the investment round closes, you can be on to the next chapter.
Is there someone in the mix that you go to for advice when you, or more of a, not quite a shoulder to cry on? Because I remember once I needed a shoulder to cry on and someone said, you know, I'm not your shoulder to cry on. It was like many years ago. I thought it was pretty harsh, but I know what that person meant. Is there someone you can go to who's a mentor or who's going to give you fantastic advice?
Definitely. We have a board, we have advisors. I have my brother and my sister-in-law who are also entrepreneurs who understand the difficulty of juggling many things. It's always that balance of being decisive because you have to make decisions quickly and being humble because you should always know that you can know more and go to people around you to ask questions and learn. There's always that kind of balancing act of the two.
Stay with me for a final chat to find out how decisiveness meets humility. And with my guest there, it's Hannah Chapat.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Hannah Shapat is my business shaper, just for a few more minutes. The last year or so, you have got a lot of recognition from lots of different places, and I'm going to read. 2024, Hannah. Forbes 30 under 30. The Times inaugural Young Power List recognizing 25 most inspiring people under 30. 2023, Property Week, Resi's Young Trailblazers, and go on and on. Plus the endorsement that you have raised £3.3 million with notable people, including people who've been on this program before. Charlie Green, co-founder of The Office Group, Debbie Wasco, leading the charge in terms of raising the amount of money that VC venture capital gives to female founders. How have you remained humble?
Very easy. Being a founder is being like slapped in the face every day. Maybe you're kind of punched in the stomach and you just have to constantly get up, get up, get up. So I think it's very easy to stay humble in the early days of building and scaling a business. It's constantly around how do you, as I said, build a profitable, scalable business that is really building, you know, value for your target audience. So it is a difficult journey to be on, and it's very much humbling. I think it's important to disconnect from the brand exposure, which is incredible for the business, and in the day-to-day running of the business, which is all about how to create the most value.
How are you so calm? I mean, I really mean that. This is like, you know, you've gone into a startup world. You're a few years in, you've raised a fantastic amount of money. The business is going well. You're looking at expanding. It's working. And, you know, you're mature beyond your years. But how? Where's that from, Hannah? Is this just who you are? Or have you developed this as you've gone along the journey since founding this business?
I think it's really important to be self-aware as a founder, because you have to know your flaws and you have to know your strengths. And then building that team that can fill any of those gaps to give you the best chance of success. So I think being self-aware and constantly questioning yourself on, are you responding with emotion? Are you responding? Are you being as practical as possible? So I think that importance of kind of checking in with yourself, because it's constantly a mixture of a marathon and a sprint. You have to sprint at certain periods, but it is a marathon that you have to survive in the long run. So I think being really self-aware and understanding every day, like, what energizes you, what takes away your energy, how can you set up yourself so you can actually work long hours but be as productive and keep on adding value to the business.
But it doesn't feel too difficult. You know, there's that bit before certain A levels where you go, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get my A or my A star. Does it feel like you're meant to do this as opposed to you're playing a role of someone who's meant to be enjoying it?
100%. And I think it goes back to that drive and the feeling of purpose of, what are you doing? Are you doing something that's going to, you know, be net positive for society? And because I really strongly believe in the mission and I can still really see that gap in the market, that's what makes this all so worth it. As well as just the incredible creative freedom that you have every day of, here's a very complex problem to solve, and the intellectual and creative freedom of how you're going to tackle that today, this year.
And actually, I went on the website and it's unbelievably simple. Literally, yeah. Just one page, yeah. And you have to do all the login stuff and, you know, actually start filtering what you want. So it's like, I would describe that as getting out the way of the product. The product is there, but it's also immediately irreverent. It's the F word with lots of stars on it and all that. You don't seem an irreverent person. Is this, I don't mean that, I mean that in a complimentary way, maybe you are irreverent. But again, how are you balancing that sense of what your brand is going to be and how you manage yourself? Because again, that it feels like you're doing both. Mm. And I'm still intrigued as to how you're not going bonkers with all this pressure. Do you feel the pressure?
I feel the pressure to get a return for our investors. And I feel the pressure to deliver a valuable product for the people we serve, which are student renters and agents and landlords. And it is a privilege to be able to work on, you know, the solution, which is for us is kind of lettings management platform that enables agents and landlords to manage the rental process. So kind of marketing channels, inquiries, the offers. That's where the complexity in the product really comes from. It's building that workflow management tool for the supply side of the equation that then ensures that the student renter has a great experience. So that's really where that's what keeps me sane, because I love the problem solving side of it.
keep solving those problems. It's been great to talk to you. I've got a feeling this is going to fly. You've done already fantastic things, and it feels like that's going to happen more so in the coming months and years. Thank you for spending some time with me. Just before I let you disappear to do more of it, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Stan Getz, The Girl from Ipanema. The reason why I've chosen it is because it very much relaxes me when I listen to it, and it reminds me of the glory days being 18 again, before starting on the kind of student renting experience journey, lying on the beach and being introduced to this song and thinking, wow, life is wonderful.
Stan Getz and The Girl from Ipanema, the song choice of my business shaper, Hannah Chapat. She talked about the actual activity of building the business as a confidence-building exercise. In other words, you gain your confidence through doing it. Don't worry and wait for the confidence to emerge before you start. Just get going. Purpose is happiness. What a lovely and simple way of defining what purpose is all about. And finally, she said, making sure you maintain that judicious balance between being decisive but also having humility. I love that. You can hear my conversation with Hannah all over again whenever you'd like as a podcast. Just search Jazz Shapers, or you can ask your smart speaker to play Jazz Shapers. Alternatively, you can catch this program nice and early again on Monday morning, just before the Jazz FM breakfast at 5 a.m. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.
The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is on at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $1,000 store-wide with our lifetime price guarantee and 100% comfort guarantee. Why shop anywhere else? Limited time clearance savings only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com.